Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week my mission is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs, business people, authors, speakers, virtual assistants, web developers, honestly, anybody that I can find who are people that are passionate about what they do, and they are excited to freely share their wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice with us each week. And today I get to welcome to the show Brian Holmes. Brian is the founder and president of the Strategic Living Institute, a life-changing organization dedicated to teaching people to harness the power and potential that God has given them. His mission and method is revolutionary, and it provides individuals the opportunity and means to receive inner life healing, purpose-specific training and development, and the practical activation necessary to be mobilized as leaders of cultural transformation. Now, every year he travels extensively, and he's speaking in conferences and leadership forums around the world. He has authored numerous books and curriculums, including the internationally acclaimed The Ties That Bind, and that book, there's a link to it in the show notes, so be sure to check on that. It's a study on identifying and breaking unhealthy connections and soul ties, and I can't wait to dive into that. In addition to his books, Brian has also created numerous video and audio programs which are specifically targeted to unlocking and releasing the full potential of every individual. This is a big topic with me. Again, I'm very excited to have him here. Brian is a board-certified counselor, a certified facilitator for the Pacific Institute, author and a lecturer, a certified life, business, and leadership coach, a master coach trainer, and mentor to people in all fields. Now, today we're going to be talking about, or Brian, rather, is going to be talking about next-level thinking. And I'm going to just stop right here and dive in because he's going to tell us all about it. And again, you can read it in the show notes. Brian, welcome. I'm so excited to have you here.
I am so delighted and very honored to have this time with you and with your great audience. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. So you talk a lot. Well, before I have a ton of questions for you. So before I get rude and just kind of dive into those, tell people a bit about yourself that I might have missed, and tell them very quickly where they can find you on the internet.
You know, every time I hear that opening bio, I want to meet this guy because I'm not sure who that is. But I'm a guy who has grown up wanting to make a difference, and I've had my own struggles, which we may talk about some of those today, throughout my life, early childhood, some traumatic things that happened along the way. But I've always loved people. I've always wanted to make a significant contribution. And the process of my own growing and learning and being developed, even being healed at one season of my life, really from some major issues, has thrust me into this field of really focusing on helping other people become all that they can be. I really believe with all my heart that, you know, everyone wants to succeed, but everyone frames what success is a little bit differently. But at the end of the day, we can become everything we were created to be, and there are some processes we can really go through. So I live my life to see people become. That's really what I do.
And this is a topic, like I said in the intro, it's very near and dear to me. You know, when you're young and you're bulletproof and you don't have any sense, I mean, really, most of us don't. And we just think that, you know, the world revolves around us and we don't have to really grow or evolve. I mean, we're here, we're perfect, people have to pay attention to us. And then life kind of happens, and all of a sudden you realize you're not bulletproof and you're just not that darn important. I mean, at least not as important as you just knew you were. And I think that's where the evolution comes in. That's when you start looking and going, okay, I have missed so many opportunities. I have squandered so much of my emotional and rational thinking where do I go now? Is that what we're talking about today?
It really is. You know, the deal is when you change your mind, you can change your world. And we do live, I think many people live to the end of their life, and they look back and they sometimes have a realization, I wish I would have, or I, what if, or could I have done more, you know, did I miss that opportunity? And at the end of the day, as a man thinketh, so is he. Our belief systems, what we believe to be true about our worth, our value, our competency, our capacity, our own, you know, view of life, what we believe to be true truly governs the trajectory and the place to which we can succeed. And I find that more and more people are discovering there really is more, but it requires us to look internally and deal with, you know, some things that are on the inside.
And that requires quiet time, doesn't it? I mean, you have to be able to sit down and be introspective. And honestly, I found this out a long time ago. You have got to be able to shine that white light directly on yourself and not flinch.
Yeah.
Which means you can't take the opportunity to go, oh, you know, it really wasn't that bad. Yeah, it was that bad. Okay, now how do we change that thinking to not do that again? Yeah, it's tough to be honest with yourself, isn't it? And I think, honestly, from my perspective, that's what we require of ourselves, just go, you know, that was bad. But even worse than that, Brian, I think most people don't give themselves, you know, high fives when they should either.
That's correct.
Do you find that? I mean, we're not going, ooh, atta girl.
We're creatures of habit. We really are. We get up every day, and this is going to sound cute, and I hope it's not offensive to anyone, but, you know, we typically go to the restroom first thing. We grab a cup of coffee. When we finally get back to the bath area, we get in the shower or get in our bathtub, and I promise you, every person does this. They're going to grab the bar of soap. They're going to start at the same part of their body every single time. We are creatures of habit. We do the exact same thing over and over and over again. It becomes second nature to us. And
it's a muscle memory.
It is. In that condition, what happens is we blow through life every day almost unconscious of the wins, almost unconscious of even the things where, man, that could have been a lot better if I had. We don't take the time, like you said, to think about or to process what could I have done differently? How could that have been addressed differently? How could I have handled that differently? You know, we just simply don't take the time because it's much easier to go on to the next thing. We live in a next thing culture. It's easier to go on to the next thing than it is to take the time to evaluate and learn from what we've just experienced. And most people are just blowing through life, doing the deal, never absorbing or assimilating the growth opportunities that are present with us every day.
What do you tell people that do this? I mean, first of all, I guess they have to be aware that they're doing it and want to say, okay, slow down, go deep. Now what's going on internally? Do you have any kind of tips or advice or processes that you advise people to do when they say, okay, it's time for me to be better than I was yesterday?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, let's begin with this premise. Beliefs are formed through our experiences. They are formed through our observations, the models that we have growing up as children. They are formed through the teaching or the philosophy or the ideals that we are handed in, whether it's in school, in culture, in life, you know, whatever. Our parents tend to pass down to us certain attitudes. So early in our life, we begin to form beliefs. These beliefs are the data on the hard drive of our heart, so to speak. And anything that we're presented with, an opportunity, an activity, a relationship, money, you know, whatever the case may be, whatever we're presented with is taken in as new data in the conscious mind, but it begins to compare itself to or measure itself against what is known, quote unquote, to be true in the subconscious, on the hard drive. And so our beliefs actually regulate how we deal with today's opportunities. And so that's kind of the starting place, is to know how beliefs are formed. They're formed through our experiences, through the things we learn, etc. Now here's the piece. Bad thinking, erroneous thinking, limiting beliefs, untrue things. If we come to believe those as being true, they become truth to us. And once they become truth to us, that truth is now going to govern the outcomes in our life. Because here's the piece. You can believe an absolute lie or untruth, but if you believe it, it's now true to you. And therefore, our decisions, our choices, our attitudes, everything in our life is going to be framed based on the truth as we believe it to be. So if a person's wanting to bust out of a rut, to get free, to get in more of a free flow, to become more, to grow, to expand, to succeed on different levels than what they're presently experiencing, it's not going to begin with anything on the outside. It's going to begin with taking the time to go through the process of discovering what are the hang-ups, where are the limitations, what areas in my own heart am I leaving unresolved, and by leaving them unresolved, in turn, they are actually keeping me from becoming the person I can be. They're keeping me from experiencing the things I could experience. I do have the capacity. I do have the potential, but my beliefs are regulating that. It's like a governor on an engine. You can have a 300-horsepower engine, but if there's a governor mechanism on there and it's degraded the power of that engine down to 100 horsepower, you're only going to get performance out of it to the degree that it's been governed. Same thing with our beliefs. The beliefs hold the key. So, again, I say this next-level thinking is all about taking the time, submitting to a process, getting the right kind of people around us to help us to look at what needs to be healed, what do we need to deal with, how do we need to be developed so we can be deployed to a new level, new level in life. Sorry.
And see, that makes perfect sense to me. And I think, at least I would like to think, that most of us come to that at some point in our life, either naturally, organically, or because we just darn have to. Some people don't, I'll be honest. Some people just don't. But I think most people are eventually going to go, you know, this isn't working for me anymore. I've got to do something different. You know, life's kind of clocking along pretty good. I'm busy. My finances are in good order. But I am not feeling like the true, authentic me. Do you find that when you're counseling with people or, you know,
Absolutely.
They're talking with you and they're just saying, I don't even know who I am?
I do a training on transition, which is something that I've actually taken the time. I took 3 or 4 days away a couple of years ago, and went away to a little cabin up in the mountains of Oklahoma, beautiful setting where I like to get away and just kind of, you know, be by myself, me, myself, and I. And I was reflecting on my entire life, trying to identify the one or two or three or maybe even four or five places where I experienced a major life transition. And those are moments where we come to a crossroads and we realize, okay, where I am presently is good, maybe. Maybe it's okay. But I know intuitively it is not everything that I can be. I know there's more. There's something, I can smell it, I can taste it. I can't see it, but I know it's there, and I'm wanting to be moved into a different level. And we reach this place, and I've identified, by the way, four stages of transition just briefly through this neighborhood. One is discontent, where we become discontent with our present reality. Number two is basically where we are discovering what the possibilities are. And then three is where we actually go into developing a mindset and a thought process toward what needs to happen in our life to move into the new season. And then, of course, we deploy into that. It's much like my four phases of four cornerstones for strategic living: personal healing, personal discovery, personal development, personal deployment. We must become discontent and embrace that in order to be thrust into a new season. But that, again, all of these processes require us to slow down, breathe, take some time, and assess what's really happening on the inside.
Now, Brian, I have to ask you this because we live in a very fast world, and I know we have all of these great things that, you know, help us with productivity. We've got dishwashers, we've got vacuum cleaners, we don't have to beat our rugs anymore, but we still seem to be moving faster and faster and faster.
Yes.
So how do people, does this just kind of come to them organically? They say, you know, I'm just going to take the time. It might be an hour in the morning where I'm meditating or tapping, EFT, whatever it takes, walking. I can't meditate, by the way. I fall asleep and drool, but I can do a walking meditation.
Yeah.
So when I'm on my treadmill, I go into this kind of zone, and I have conversations with my subconscious, apparently. But yeah, it's difficult, I think, for a lot of people to just say, you know, I'm going to slow down a bit. I'm going to get up earlier or go to bed a little bit later. I'm going to go outside, sit under a tree all by myself, and I'm just going to kind of check out from the world and check in with me. Is that a problem, do you see?
It's a massive cultural problem. In fact, I think over the last 10 to 15 years, I've observed, and many books have been written about this, many studies have been done, so it's certainly not mine, but it's something that I've observed in my own life and around me. We live in a culture that is over-the-top hyperactive. And I'm talking about where we measure success, we measure worth, we measure value, we measure productivity by how busy we are, how crammed our day is, how many appointments we can fill in one day, you know, how many items we can tick off of our to-do list. And everything is about volume as opposed to about quality. And I would suggest that we're busier than we've ever been. In some sense, we're getting done more than we've ever gotten done before. The question, the underlying question is what we're doing and all these activities and the busyness and the appointments and the blowing and going, is that aligned with the reason for which one was created? Is that aligned with a fundamental purpose for which I'm in the earth today? I wasn't born in 1960. I was born in 1967, and I'm coming into the prime of my life in the 1990s, or really the 2000s, now 2015. So what is it about me today? Are the activities that I'm involved in today, are they producing the result I was born to produce? Or am I just being busy? And I'm telling you, busy is not necessarily all it's cracked up to be. I know a lot of people I know several people that have passed away in the recent number of years, two or three years now, and a couple of them have actually said to me something of the sort that they wish they would have slowed down and taken the time to really focus on what mattered, what really mattered. And so we are in this unbelievable season of life where we are, think about this, we have so much information coming at us from every angle, the radio, the television, our phone in our hand, the iPads, the computers. It's everywhere. We're overrun with information, all of which is demanding something of us. And yet I think we need to get back to what I call, and this is the name of my podcast, it's the name of my company, strategic living. We need to get back to a place where we are living intentionally, living on purpose, and living strategically. We're not saying yes to everything. We are, as Greg McKeown said in Essentialism, he says we are in this pursuit of less. We want to be in this meaningful pursuit of less, where we're focused on less, but actually doing more. And that's what I believe we've got to get about doing.
Look, I agree with you. You're not going to find any argument with me at all. In fact, what I'm finding, and this may or may not even be apropos to the conversation, but I am finding that we are surrounded by stuff. It's everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Everywhere.
Look, I went into my garage recently because, you know, it's finally spring here, and I live in the deep south. It gets very humid very quickly, and I just fall over. I mean, I cannot cope with humidity. So anytime we have a dry, clear day, I'm outside or I'm working in the garage, and I got to looking at the stuff in my garage, and I went, oh, this is ridiculous. If I haven't seen it in 2 years or needed it, I'm donating it to a church. Right now I've got 4 great big containers of stuff that's going to a church, and I don't even want to look in my closets. We just have stuff. And honestly, all of it is attached to an emotion, isn't it? Where
did
we get it? Why are we hanging on to it? I find that very distracting. So I'm in the middle of just really, and my house is not cluttered, don't get me wrong, but I've got stuff everywhere. Sometimes I have 2 stuffs. I mean, it's like, why do I have 3 of that thing, for crying out loud? It's driving me crazy, I'll be honest with you.
Well, I'll tell you,
declutter my mind and declutter my emotions.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, the idea here is this. to live strategically, we have to become very intentional about that. In other words, we have to throw our system out of balance for a little bit. And I say out of balance because if you think of it, what has become normal to us really is hurting us. What this normal mindset and lifestyle of acquiring things and staying busy and doing, that has actually gotten in the way of tapping into the significance that we could be contributing to this life. And so we almost have to reel it in, throw the thing out of balance for a while, and begin to construct a new, very strategic way of living that is built around some fundamental discoveries that we can talk about. Actually, I'll tell you the four cornerstones for strategic living. And let me just give these to you very briefly if I can. Personal healing, this is where I believe each of us needs to assess and look at, as you said early in the program, very honestly, very transparently, with an open heart, look at what are the things that have happened in my life that have caused brokenness, that have caused pain, that have made me to feel as though I'm rejected or less than? What are the moments where I've experienced great grief or sadness? And then once we've identified what those areas are, ask the question, are these fully reconciled? Are they resolved? Or are they contributing to a mindset, a belief system, or a behavior pattern today that's keeping me from actually moving forward and moving into what I can be? So this personal healing piece, to me, is the chief cornerstone. It's the primary component. It begins there. Once we've done the healing piece, then we can go into getting clarity by discovering who we are and why we're here. You know, the age-old question, who am I and why am I here? So we look at things like personality styles. These are very important. We look at strengths. We look at gifts, talents, abilities. We look at what are my passions? What am I really lit up about? What do I enjoy doing? What gives me joy when I am involved in that activity? What are my dreams? And I will tell you, it's crazy to me, but everyone that I interview, every client that I've ever coached, one of the early questions that I ask is, what are the three dreams that you've given up on? And they were like, what? And I guarantee you, every human being walking around has a dream or two at least that at some point they were passionate about and driven to achieve, but life
got in the way.
Along the way got in the way, and they eventually just filed it away somewhere in a filing cabinet and gave up on the thing. And I believe it's time for us to awaken dreams. So this discovery process, personal discovery, is about awakening the dreams, determining who I am, looking at my strengths, talents, skills, abilities, and looking at where all those things converge. Where those components converge is what I call the sweet spot, and that's discovery. And then we get into, once we've discovered that, and we've kind of got an idea of where we're headed, now we want to do personal development, which is where we go out and acquire new skill sets. We get a massive knowledge base. We read books, go to conferences, you know, do online courses, whatever we need to go out. Maybe it's go back to school and get another degree. Whatever that may be for you, it is the development process, the preparation process, so that you can arrive at step number four, which is personal deployment. It's where we actually become activated, engaged in, and busy doing the things that are now, with clarity, associated with the who am I and why am I here. So this whole process is so important. And again, you really can't give yourself to that process without giving yourself to that process. In other words, it has to be intentional. It's a decision you make. I'm going to really go through this process and determine and get clarity on how I can be the best me that I can be.
And you have to do it consistently, don't you?
It is a cycle. You're exactly right. In fact, I would suggest that about every 7 to 10 years, you'll find yourself going back through this cycle again, even the healing part, because there'll be things that will be uncovered that you weren't aware of 5, 6, 7 years ago. But you go through the process of healing again, discovering new things again, developing those strengths again, and then deploying into another season of life. I'm there right now. Just recently, I've gone through one of these massive transitions, and I am just now at 48 years old, moving into this new chapter, but it required of me the last 3 years to go through this entire process.
I don't want to get too personal, but do you want to share some of that journey?
Sure, absolutely. This most recent one, and I could share my story another time, maybe my early life story, but this most recent transition for me is, you know, I spent a good number of years of my life, in fact, from the time I was very young, probably an older teenager, working in the context of a local church or religious setting. You know, I've fulfilled various roles in the administrative structure of a church. I've been a consultant. I've been a youth pastor. I even spent 12 years as a senior pastor of a church. And all the while traveling and doing leadership events and doing all kinds of things worldwide, but that was my local responsibility. And about 2 or 3 years ago, I began to discover that the message that I carry, the thing that I am born to get out there, really needs a larger platform, a larger audience, rather than just doing something in the context of, you know, four walls and a handful of people. I wanted to find a way to get this message out there. But I had to go back and deal with a lot of my insecurities. This is the healing part for me recently. You know, I was so concerned about what others thought of me. I was concerned about, well, if I relinquish the title, as it were, of pastor, or if I give up being this guy to so many people, does that diminish my value, my worth in the marketplace? I had tremendous hang-ups with other people's expectations of me because I have always sought after people's approval rather than really just pursuing what I was supposed to be doing. And so I tended to frame my life around people's expectations as opposed to framing my life around purpose. And so I went through this whole process of getting kind of free from that. I went through the process of discovering, reevaluating my strengths, my talents, my skills, my abilities, my opportunities, my dreams, my visions, all these things. And then for the last 3 years, I have immersed myself in conferences, training programs, online courses, hiring my own coach, even though I am a coach, and getting people involved in my life to help me develop so I could relaunch my life with this new context. And so I have literally lived this exact process out the last several years. And I would just note that this is about the fourth time that I can mark in my life where these four steps that I've had to go through. So I'm 48, so four times since high school. So about every 7 or 10 years.
I think that's the norm as far as I've always understood it. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've always understood that every 7 years we're a completely different person, practically.
Well, I think life is progressive. You know, life is always in motion. I think probably, you know, I have a 20-year-old son. I have a 17-year-old daughter, and I am mentoring my son as much as he will allow me. He and I have a great relationship, but, you know, he's involved in school. He's involved in a great job that he has, and he's got, of course, tremendous friends and people in his life, but I want to sow some things into him at this stage of his life because I want him to grab a hold of some of the realizations that I have grabbed a hold of in the last few years. I'd like him to do those a little earlier than me because my theory is I believe that people tend to have these major moments of movement and transition every 7 or 10 years because there were some lessons they didn't learn early on. And I think we can accelerate that for a generation coming behind us because if they're willing to learn from the lessons we've learned, then they can actually accelerate their process and get to a level of success faster than we have. I believe my son can accomplish by 30 what I will accomplish by 50 if he will but take these principles and live by them.
I can't wait to hear that, how that happens. And the reason I say that is because I've been having a lot of chats about millennials. And
oh, yes.
Look, I find that some of them are just fantastic, and others I'm like, really? What in the heck is wrong with your thinking? So I'm watching this next generation with great fascination is the best that I can say.
You know, I work in the internet space quite a bit, and I have a lot of great friends and mentors in that world. And some of the guys that are hitting it out of the park, really functioning by way of their purpose, their calling, are really impacting hundreds of thousands of people's lives every single week, and they're making a tremendous amount of money doing it. They're young. They're millennials.
I know.
And so I think we have this interesting dichotomy here. I think there's a group of this age bracket that are grabbing a hold of these principles earlier than you and I did. And there's quite a number of them that are really taking off, because here's the thing, success is always predicated by living principles. Principles work, period, for anybody. You know, the old scripture said it rains on the just and the unjust. It doesn't matter who administers the principles. Principles will produce the result. And so these guys are catching on to some things now, and they're finding great success in all areas of life. But then again, on the other hand, there's a group of millennials and the generation just younger than them that are just clueless. And I think it has to do with the kind of input they have in their life. Do they have mentors? Do they have strong parent role models? Do they have people who are speaking into their life and coaching them? And that's the key right there, I believe. You know, it really is important who you have around you.
Oh, I agree with you, and that's why I'm so excited to hear you say that, you know, you're coaching and mentoring your son. I ran into a kid the other day in the grocery store, and normally I wouldn't comment on something like this, but this poor boy, I don't know what earth he was trotting, but he just was not here. And he's not a stupid kid at all, but he was so disconnected from everything that was going on around him, and he just was not engaged at any level at all. And literally, I could see his thumbs. He was typing on an imaginary keyboard with his thumbs.
That's a shame, I know.
And bless his heart, all I wanted was a little watermelon. He just could not figure out how to find a watermelon. He worked in the produce section. I came across him a couple more times, and he's a tall, good-looking boy. He looks like he should have a lot on the ball, but you can tell he's just not engaged. Unless he pulls his head and his thumbs out of his behind, he's going to have a tough life. That's all I've got to say.
You know,
I feel sorry for him.
Oh, yeah. My wife and I received a tremendous amount of criticism from some of our dearest friends growing up, because the church that we were a part of at the time, there were 12 couples all our age that had children in 1 year. So we had 12 babies growing up exactly the same age bracket, you know, within a year. And, and you know, there were just certain values that we had, certain beliefs that we had. None of them were religious in nature. But, for example, I'll give you an example of one. We were very, very, very particular about how many or what types of TV programs we allowed our children to watch. We were very particular about how much time they were allowed to watch TV each week. This is crazy. People don't believe this at all when I tell them this, but we never, to this day, and my kids are basically grown now, we never allowed there to be a video game console in our house.
Good for you.
Because I felt like, listen, I would much rather my children grow up having relationships, real relationships with people, playing with, you know, human beings in the yard versus, you know, imaginary friends on the television screen. I would rather them actually engage in reading books and learning and engaging in conversations. And you know what? That has paid immense dividends for us, because I'm telling you, our kids, and I'm not just a proud dad, everyone tells us this, our kids are exceptionally mature. They know how to engage in conversation. They know how to have tremendous adult-level conversations. Now, they know how to solve problems. They love to read. They love to learn. And it's not because we did anything to make that the case, except that we framed a particular environment where they had an opportunity to take on good skill sets versus like this, you know, precious young man you met in the grocery store that probably, like some of my son's friends, my daughter's friends over the years, spent 8 hours a day on video game consoles, and they're mush brains.
Right.
They're
right.
Antisocial. They're socially
exactly.
retarded.
Exactly. This poor kid, I mean, he didn't have a clue what earth he was on. And we tried 3 or 4 times to get him to go back to the back and find these little, they call them personal watermelons. Me and one other lady wanted them, and we couldn't find them. We stood there very patiently, and he brings out one. There are two women standing there. He couldn't figure out that two women couldn't split one watermelon. And honestly, normally I would just be stomping off in a huff, but I was so fascinated watching this poor, hapless boy and wondering what in the heck is going to happen to him. He worries me. I'll be honest with you. I'm worried about that kid.
Well, you know, I have taken on one of my governing values is I am a lifetime learner. And I absolutely believe that what we have modeled for us, the framework we're either given or choose for our lives, and those kinds of things play a huge role in how we develop. Now, let's take this young man as an example. Let's say I don't know how old he was, but let's say he's 16 years old, 17 years old.
Somewhere around there.
10 years from now, he'll be 27. 20 years, he'll be 37. What's going to happen in his adult life when he's trying to make a living, be significant, find his purpose, do what he's here to do? What's going to happen if he doesn't address the limiting areas, the limiting beliefs, the limiting philosophies and mindsets and viewpoints that he's presently operating in? And I will tell you, there are 40-year-old men in the marketplace that are stuck in that 17-year-old's body back there because they've never reconciled or dealt with the limiting beliefs, the limiting structures that they were given, and they're addressing potential and opportunity from a perspective that is so totally limited. Therefore, whatever that opportunity should produce for them will never produce it for them because they're going to see the result proportionate to their belief system. And so it's that kid I want to reach. I want to reach that kid. Now, I'm involved a lot with older adults trying to help them to process through this now, but my passion is to see the generation coming behind us resolve and reconcile these issues early on and deal with these things so that when they come into their moment of potential, they're not just going to shoot a blank, you know?
Right. Well, here's my fear for this kid. He's so hapless. I mean, that's the only word. Every time I'd look, and I've run into him about 3 times, I'm thinking I won't run into him again. I think they'll fire him. They're going to have to. And I hate to see that happen because that's going to become, I think, a pattern for this boy. He's going to get fired and fired and fired. And that's going to become his frame of reference. And
that's right.
I keep hoping that somebody will just take him aside and say, look, you're a nice kid. You're a sweet boy. How about if we try you actually making contact with people? How about if you're looking at 2 women who want watermelons, you bring out 2 watermelons? You know, just simple things, baby steps. You know, just try to pull him into the real world. I don't think it's going to happen. But I'm hoping that somebody takes this kid and tries to mentor him like you're doing with your son. Because otherwise, he's going to be a 47-year-old dropout. He's never... ever going to be anything other than what he is right now, which is this goofy-looking kid with a mop of hair slumped over his keyboard. He scares me. He really worries me.
Well, you know, I partly blame parents for this because parents many times add to the problem by, you know, verbally telling the children, you know, you're stupid, you're worthless, you're no good, and look at you. You know, you can't even keep, you know. And so we tend to affirm to the negative. And then I tell people all the time, I have 27 people in my head always talking to me. And the truth is we do have a voice.
I do too.
we have this self-talk happening all the time, and it's either affirming truth or it's affirming all the things we believe. And here's the thing, that young man will behave and act in accordance with the truth as he believes it to be. He will continue to do things that prove to himself that he is who he believes he is. And so, unfortunately, it's this vicious cycle. At some point, a young man, a young woman has to break out of the cycle, and usually that requires someone coming alongside and helping them to identify and process through some brokenness.
What do you find in your years of working with people who are going through this process who say, okay, I'm done. I don't want to be the same old me. It's not working. I'm not enjoying it. I'm actually miserable. Is there any common catalyst that you're finding? Is there any one or two things that just make people go, all right, I am no longer going to tolerate this in my life. I'm no longer going to tolerate me.
Yeah. You know, I find that there's 3 categories of people in coming to that moment of decision. One category is a person simply decides, they just consciously become aware, look, there's got to be more to life than this. I know I'm better than this. I know there's something that I've got to be able to work through to get to a better place, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get there. That person just decides on their own they're going to do it. And they recognize opportunities. They recognize potential, but they just can't ever seem to go into it. But they make up their mind, I'm going to get the help I need. I'm going to find people to have in my life that are positive. I'm going to get a coach, a counselor, someone, and they go after it. That's a rare person, by the way. The second category of person is the person who life and the internal brokenness that is so prolific brings them to a place. They just hit bottom. They literally hit bottom. And catastrophic things happen, or a major breach of something takes place, and it literally shatters their life, and they have nowhere to go but up. That's a different category of person, because they didn't really decide it. Life handed them, you know, an opportunity to do something, either to just give up or to change. The third category of person is a person that comes to a place of brokenness or desperation, or their life's undone, but they choose to believe the untruth about themselves, and they just continue repeating the cycle over and over and over again. And I believe that each of us have the capacity to be category number one, but it takes discipline, it takes intent, and it takes a will to say, I'm better than this. I can do more than this. I can accomplish more. You know, unfortunately, a lot of people have a lot of brokenness. You know, when I say brokenness, right, I'm talking about stuff that happened in their childhood. You know, a broken marriage. You know, parents divorced, loss of a loved one, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, and those things create what I call faults. I'm not talking about something being your fault. I'm talking about a fault is a massive crack in the surface of the earth, but it's really below the surface. You can't see it on the surface, but it's there. And everything built on top of that is susceptible to catastrophe, because just below what looks okay is this underlying issue that hasn't been addressed. And when the pressure's on, that thing can't hold the weight. And so I encourage people to say, I want to be ruthless with my faults. I don't want to act like they're not there, but we're masters of acting like we have no problems. How are you doing? I'm great today, man. How are you doing?
Yeah.
Well, the truth is, you might be miserable. You might be depressed. You might be having a really crappy day. But whatever the deal is, you know, we have been conditioned in our culture through media that it's easier to be dishonest than it is to be honest and have to deal with the repercussions of it. And so we have learned to be dishonest with ourselves, and therefore we're dishonest with our life and the people around us.
Well, part of that goes to, you know, when you said, you know, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fine. I always say, oh, I'm good. I'm just not going to bore people with the cruddy day I'm having, if I'm having one. I'll be honest with you. My cruddy days normally last about 30 minutes. After that, I shake myself out of it, have a good laugh, and then move on. I just don't tend to wallow in it, but every once in a while I'll have a stomping fit. I mean, you know, sometimes you just have to release it, and I'll go outside and kick the fence and dig a hole, move a rose bush, and then I come back in and I'm good. I'm in the South. I mean, we're just like, how are you doing? Oh, we're good. Thank you. How are you? And that's just the way we're taught to do it. We're not supposed to go, oh, I have a headache. Oh, I have a back. Look, I run from those people. The minute you start telling me how cruddy your life is, I am out of there.
Well, I'm not talking about the casual conversations. I'm talking about...
No, I understand what you're saying. Right,
yeah, because I'm like you. I don't just run from people that whine and moan and complain about everything. I just shoot them in the kneecaps and I'm gone, you know, because I don't like that. I'm just kidding. Yeah. I don't want to be around negative people. That's not what I'm in any way suggesting. What I'm saying is that, you know, let's have someone in our life that we can look at in the eyes and say, you know what, I'm not just having a tough day. My attitude is not in a good place. I'm really struggling with this issue right here. I don't know what to do with this. And we don't want to admit that we're not perfect. We don't want to admit that we have challenges. We don't want to admit that, because somehow it goes back to the approval thing. We think that if we admit our failures, we admit our faults, we admit our challenges, that it somehow devalues us in the eyes of others. My experience, honestly, is that when I am transparent about my story, about my life, about what I'm dealing with now, when I'm transparent about me, it actually opens up a fresh and lively and beautiful dialogue that gives everyone in my sphere the opportunity to say, yeah, man, I'm dealing with that too. And so
now,
it
how
just,
difficult you know, was that for you, though, to get to there? But look, I am known, I'm an introvert. Look, I'm a high-functioning introvert. I'll be honest with you, I'm half an inch away from being a hermit. I don't share. I don't. I have never been one for sharing my thoughts or feelings. I've always just kept it to myself. But therein lies the problem, doesn't it? Because I'm not really willing to have these deep conversations with other people. So I hire coaches. I hire coaches and mentors.
There you go.
Because I know I need to have somebody that under the seal of confidentiality, I can tell them anything and they can give me feedback. And I may reject it. I may embrace it. But it's like that fault you're talking about. I can get it out. I can relieve that pressure.
Yeah. If you have a family member that you can do that with, that's wonderful. If you've got a friend, a true friend that you can do that with, that's a blessing and a gift. But I'll tell you, I think most times we need someone who is objective, who does not necessarily have, as we say in the South, a dog in the hunt, and someone who will be truthful with you because they're not necessarily wanting to hurt your feelings, but they're not afraid of doing so if it's going to mean progress for you. And so, hiring a coach, having a mentor, getting someone in your life that can actually, even if you have to pay them, I mean, look, paid help is better than no help, okay? I'm just going to tell you straight up. But you need, every one of us needs someone in our life that we can simply be authentic with and give them permission to speak into our lives, to point out things. I have a couple of guys in my life that are just friends of mine. And these two guys, because of our deep relationship, I've given them absolute permission to call me out if they see me speaking to my wife in a way that's not pleasant. If they see something in my marriage that they're concerned about, I want them asking me about it. I've got a mastermind group that I'm a part of, and these guys, we do life together on such a level where we literally can call each other on things, and you need that kind of accountability. To be isolated is to actually be dying. It took me a while to figure that out.
It did, because I'm a very quiet, very introspective, very private person. And solitude, honestly, is my natural bent. I'm happiest when I'm just off by myself doing whatever it is that I want to do. But I found that I was actually building big walls around myself. I'm not sure what I was protecting myself from, but it wasn't good. And
well,
it took me a long time to walk away from that.
The unconscious rationale is that we're protecting ourselves from the opinions of or the wrath of other people or getting hurt by other people. That's the unconscious rationale. But the truth is what we're really doing, this is my very strong viewpoint, we're protecting ourselves from the pain of dealing with the issue we don't want to talk about. Human beings have the incredible propensity to avoid pain. Yet, if you think about this, pain is our friend, Denise. It's our friend.
It's a warning system, isn't it? I mean, it's an early warning.
If you have gangrene in your foot or on some part of your body, and you're not experiencing pain on some level or discomfort, then you could go weeks without knowing it. Pain is your friend. If you're internally bleeding or you've got a bone that's broken, if that bone is broken and you don't feel it and you don't experience the pain of it and embrace the pain of it on some level, you may never get that fixed. It might heal, but it will not heal correctly. I mean, think of this metaphor here. And so pain is actually the thing that... It's only when we embrace pain that true healing begins. And let me just give you this. I know we've kind of danced around it here a few times, but when I was 11 years old, I was abused by someone in our circle, in our family circle. It wasn't a family member, but it was someone who was close to our family. And that same person introduced me to some things that tragically sent my life reeling. 11 years old. A child's brain is not developed enough to know how to compartmentalize that sort of an event. And I stuffed it away. And my religious environment I grew up in was very caustic and very legalistic. And so that was another layer. I certainly couldn't talk to anybody about what had happened. So I internalized all of this. And that moment, that one moment that took place in my life, actually began the process of unraveling my destiny, unraveling my purpose, because my beliefs began to be formed around my worthlessness, how dirty I was. It was shame, guilt. It was all kinds of addictive behaviors and addictive mindsets and anger, lots of rage. And I lived with this from 11 years old all the way through junior high, all the way through high school. And then I brought all of this baggage, all of this brokenness, all of this mess into my marriage. Imagine bringing all that into your marriage and expecting your marriage to be successful. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. And so it was 22 years after the event that I happened into a program here in Dallas-Fort Worth that was actually originally written and conducted by Dr. Phil, the Dr. Phil. He and his father wrote this program called Pathways, and my wife and I were privileged to go in the doors. I was at a desperate place in my life. I was so broken. My marriage was in shambles. I was hurting the people that I loved the most on so many levels. Everything. And by the way, at that point in my life, I was very successful. I was traveling all over the world, speaking. I was in all kinds of opportunities, businesses, what have you. But all of that was caving in on me because I had come to a point where I could no longer continue in the condition that I was in. Well, in this secular program, and I say secular because my reference point is very much a Christian worldview, this secular program, not a church program, actually afforded me the opportunity to look inside. Nothing else had done that for me ever. And it was in that place over the course of a couple of weeks where my life was transformed, where I entered into the process of personal healing, and my life began to turn. My marriage was restored. My family was restored. The things that I was working on and working with began to come back again and show signs of life because I had entered into this place of healing. And I'll tell you, if a person will simply embrace the pain, that's what I was getting at, in that room, in that hotel ballroom where we did this training, I'll never forget the first time I sat across from a stranger and I opened my mouth and I said, when I was 11 years old, this happened to me, just very nonchalantly. But when the words rolled off my tongue, the emotion that was pent up, all the anger, all the years of hurt and pain and all that emotion came bursting into the present, and it was excruciating. I spent about 2 weeks I felt like I was emotionally and spiritually and physically dying because I was coping with and finally dealing with all the pain that for 22 years I had avoided. But it was the embracing the pain that began the legitimate process of healing that's brought me to this place in my life today where I'm helping other people. Because had I not dealt with that then, I could not help others deal with it now. So the pain piece is very important, and we want to avoid that, but don't. You must embrace the pain if you're going to begin the process of healing.
And I know that sounds counterintuitive because we're always told to kind of suck it up, be brave, stand tall.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes that is just the absolute wrong thing to do. And to go back to the beginning of your story, your 11-year-old brain could not possibly understand that you were not at fault. This adult was acting against you. I mean, you were not at fault. But your 11-year-old mind does not know that, cannot process that.
Exactly right. Yeah, and I find, too, just a sidebar here, most people in life, if they're really struggling to break through to another level, almost always it can be traced back to some childhood condition, be it an event, a moment, a relationship, models. Something in our childhood usually is the primary thing where the root of our condition exists. And so we have to do some work to go back there and deal with some of that and resolve some of that, but it's worth it. It's so worth it in the end.
I've been there, done it. I will continue to do it for the rest of my life. I absolutely agree with you, and I understand what you're talking about. But that leads me to my next question. When you're going down these journeys, and let's hope it's not just once, you're going to do it, you know, as needed throughout your life, but I have found, and other people that I know who undergo this process deliberately or just because they have to, I have found that you lose people along the way. You're going to shed friends. You're going to shed family members.
Yes.
It's just a natural byproduct, isn't it?
You know, I tell people often, I do a lot of leadership development programs, and I tell people all the time that when you move, life is lived on levels. It's experienced in stages. When you decide you're going to the next level, one thing that you must know on the front end of that process is that not everybody is going to go with you. And furthermore, when you begin to focus on new chapters and new things and new directions, the people that have had you figured out on the previous level are going to criticize, they're going to question, they're going to not understand. And the truth is you cannot expect them to understand because they're not walking the same journey you are. And so we have to embrace and understand and know that, you know what, this person can't understand me. It's okay. I'm not going to take offense to it. They can't possibly know what's happening in my life on every level because they're not walking out the same heart level journey that I am right now. It's okay. But know this. You said it up just a moment ago. Relationships come and relationships go. And not every relationship can go with you to the next level.
And that's scary for a lot of people. They become very attached to the relationships that exist now, and they may not all be healthy. You know, sometimes
that's
the best thing to do is just say, you know, you were in my life for a reason. I respect that. I honor that. But it's time for us both to move on now. And that's tough for people. I think that the anticipation of that is actually far worse than, you know, the actual event itself. Kind of like when I lost my 18-year-old cat recently. I had to have him euthanized because he had cancer, and it about broke me. I mean, he was 18 years old. He was with me 24/7. I'm looking at his picture on my desk right now. I'll be honest with you, the thinking about it, the month or two that led up to it, and me trying to comfort him and keep him alive and spend time with him, the day that it actually happened, I mean, I lost my little mind, but it was also such a relief. The anticipation was far worse than the actual event. And I would like to caution people about that. Don't overthink it. It's just going to happen naturally. Let it happen.
Yeah. And don't avoid it. Don't prolong something. Let it happen organically and naturally. And I would add this as well, is that, you know, two objects cannot occupy the same space. If it becomes necessary for you to move a relationship on, to not have a certain person in your life, that is going to create space for a new relationship on a new level. In my experience, honestly, the last 3 years, for example, I have added probably 5 to 7 new relationships that are such next-level relationships. I can't even describe to you how next-level they are. They're phenomenal. But I would not have had the bandwidth or the time or the emotional energy to invest in those relationships were I still coddling and stewarding relationships that had really served their time, if that makes sense.
That is brilliant, and I'm so glad you said that. I have the same conversation with people that I coach and mentor in the virtual assistant industry about clients. Like, you know, if you've got clients that don't serve you, you're not particularly happy working with them, let them go. Don't worry about the money. Let them go, because nature abhors a vacuum. The next client that comes along is going to be your ideal client. Let it go. It's tough.
Absolutely.
On a logically, you're going, no, I'm looking at my bank balance, no. But it's just intuitively, you already know it's the right thing to do, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that nature abhors a vacuum. I've heard that quote before. The thing is that we have to understand that everything has a time, everything has a season. And there's an old proverb in Ecclesiastes chapter number 3 in the Bible that says there's a time to live, a time to die, a time to cry, a time to laugh, a time to sow, a time to harvest. You know, and it's got all these wonderful examples of how there's just a time for some things. There's a time to let them go. And sometimes relationships, we want to be lifelong relationships, but you'll be fortunate in your lifetime if you have one or two relationships that are with you forever. Most relationships go through cycles, and that's okay.
True, absolutely true. Oh, we've only got 10 seconds. This has been one of the fastest hours. I mean, it has been a pleasure having you here.
Thank you. People can find me at brianholmes.com.
Right.
And you asked me that a while ago, and I forgot to mention. So brianholmes.com. Everything we do, our podcast, and everything's right there.
And we're still recording, so the streaming is gone, but anybody listening to us will hear that information. So very quickly, tell people a bit about your podcast, and then I'll let you go.
You bet. Well, we have the Strategic Living Podcast, which is all about transforming minds, developing leaders, awakening dreams, activating people's destinies, and doing a lot of what we've talked about here today. And on the program, most all of our content is geared around these four cornerstones. They are, you know, personal healing, personal discovery, personal development, personal deployment. So we absolutely invite you to be a part of that community. Also, every Monday on our website, we have something we call Monday Mastery. It's a short 3 to 5 minute, maybe 7 minute video, and it's just taking these same kinds of principles and giving you a power nugget for the day, for the week. And that's also widely followed on YouTube and on our website. But everything we do can be found at brianholmes.com.
Excellent. Brian, I would love to have you come back. We didn't even begin to cover what I wanted to ask you.
You betcha.
There's just so much. I'm like, hang on, don't go. Oh, crud, our hour's up. But please do come back.
You bet. I'd love to do that anytime. And thank you so much for having me on. It's a privilege and an honor. And I just encourage
all
of your listeners to just dive in and become all you can be.
Excellent advice. And honestly, the next time you come on, I want to find out how you came to this. I mean, I would like to go deep into the story of how you got where you are now.
Absolutely. I'd love to do that.
Okay, great. Well, listen, Brian, thank you again. It has been an honor and a pleasure, and I know the audience has enjoyed the takeaways and learned as much as I did. I'm sure they have. Everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour, and you can also find us on iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Brian Holmes, and I will see you next week. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottogovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.